When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Pettycast, let's get right into it. We get petty on Tuesdays at 8 o'clock. It's all pent-up pettiness from Sunday and Monday and over the weekend. So we highlight our own pettiness. We highlight the pettiness of others. It is called the
Pettycast. Embrace the pettiness. Embrace You're not trying it. To be a good human being at this hour on a Tuesday.
At least the next 17 minutes, embrace the pettiness.
You embrace your pettiness now so you don't take it out on those in your personal life.
That's right. I don't know if you saw this, and boy, I don't know if this tweet got deleted or not, because I'm clicking on it now, and it's not necessarily popping up. It said something went wrong while I was trying to load, but
Sarge had said that we have to hold CJ. Big Sarge had said that, you know, we have to hold something along the lines of that CJ Stroud deserved criticism, right?
He said CJ Stroud needs to be held accountable for his play in the second half.
Yeah.
And Kim Stroud, CJ's mom, retweeted and said, "Really?
Yeah.
I'm kind of enjoying this whole family member jumping in off the top rope thing that's going on. Man, between Kim Stroud and Tari Eason's mom.
Tari Eason's mom gets after it. Tari Eason's mom is very active and very vocal.
Yes.
And I don't know if CJ's mom is... she doesn't seem like she's really wired that way, but she's gonna mama bear sometimes.
She's got to take care of her kid. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I kind of like seeing it. I'm not gonna lie.
Think that as far as Big Sarge's point, I think it is a valid point, and I don't think that people are shying away from saying that. Yeah, those two interceptions were ugly interceptions. CJ himself said as much. You know, D'Amico. You know, very mildly criticized CJ and said that he needs to be better than that, you got to get better play than that on the. So I would say that I think what Sarge said was correct, but that I also think that he is being held accountable, and he's holding himself accountable. But you got to look at the whole picture too, and look at how much pressure and how bad the pass protection's been, and how much that clouds the picture.
Yeah,
so.
I'm just here for Sarge v. Kim Stroud is all. I'm ready for round two, man.
I don't want that.
It's the petty cast. Yeah. What are you talking about?
She's so nice.
She can handle her business.
So who are we being petty towards here?
We're
lauding her pettiness?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, all right.
And it's not really petty when you're just, you know, you're sticking up for your son.
Right. This felt like a good place to slot this. Let's get to Micah Parsons. I think we can all agree this Micah Parsons thing is slathered in pettiness.
Yeah, you got to remind me about the petty that I'm supposed to be petty.
Here was Micah Parsons. This was construed by many as a shot at Mike McCarthy following the Cowboys loss to the Eagles on Sunday.
You know, that's above my pay grade about if Mike is coaching again next year. But you know, all coaching aside, coaching, you know, Mike can leave and go wherever he wants, but the guys I kind of feel bad for is guys like Zach Martin and guys who might be on their last year on their way out, you know, because that's who I wanted to hold the trophy for. You know, you want to win games and do great things with those type of legends who put in more time and work than Mike McCarthy ever did. So those are the kind of guys that I have so much sympathy and hurt for.
Put in more time and work than Mike McCarthy ever did.
The best thing is that this has all played out exactly like you would have expected. The first quote that you saw was, wow, Parsons sounds like he's attacking McCarthy for no reason, but there's probably a little bit more to it. And I figured there would be a bunch of people would stand up and saying, hey, Micah Parsons is a victim here. You guys got to listen to the whole exchange. Yeah. So you and I went back and we listened to the whole exchange.
Yes.
And yes, he was answering a question about, you know, Mike McCarthy and where he might be next year and everything. So it wasn't like he brought it up unprompted. The part at the end there was where, like, no, he just flat out said that those players have put in more time than Mike McCarthy ever did.
More time and work.
Shut up, Micah. No, they haven't. Mike McCarthy, and I've been one of the most vocal Mike McCarthy critics. But Stop it. Stop acting like a guy who's been in the NFL for decades hasn't put in the hours that the NFL players did. I can tell you, as a player, I knew, like, I was known as a guy with a really good work ethic. I knew the whole time that I wasn't working the way the coaches work.
Right.
In terms of hours and everything. Had I done more bench press reps than the coaches? Yes. Had I lifted more weight? Sure. Had I done more wind sprints than Fat Richard Smith? You betcha. But, God, no. I hadn't put in the hours that those guys had. See, what the hell are you even talking about, Micah Parsons?
That might be... That's not on the rundown for the Pettycast, but that is... You taking a drive-by on Richard Smith for no reason...
Right.
I think is perfect.
That's
for the
spirit of the Pettycast.
Spirit of the Pettycast. All right, here's Rex Ryan, former head coach. As you can imagine, he was none too pleased with Micah Parsons' take.
He doesn't deserve that. Mike McCarthy, no coach deserves that because the hours, trust me, my friend, the hours this guy's putting in, no player is putting in the work that a head coach is, I can assure you. And look, you can have some private issue, all right? Go to the owner, go to whoever, go to Mike McCarthy. But why the hell do you think you need to say that? That why do you need to hurt this man? Who do you think gets blamed for everything? He gets it anyway. And so why are you piling on? All right, yeah, dead man walking. Yeah, he is. But you know what? He's professional as hell. He hadn't once blamed a damn player, ever. It's bullshit.
No, and it is, and it's going into business for yourself. It's... You know, trying to, you know, and Micah, he's just so tone deaf and stupid in so many ways. But especially when it comes to, I think in Micah's mind, he was probably thinking like, yeah, I'm going to stand by my teammates. But he can't even do that right.
Yeah.
You know, like you put into a situation where, okay, if there's any chance at all of rescuing this Cowboys season, the way to do it is to not publicly question the head coach's work ethic.
Correct.
And while supporting it. It's like, Sean, we've talked about this before. It's like when somebody gives you a compliment, but they're simultaneously insulting one of your friends.
Yeah.
You know, like somebody comes up to you and is like, hey, Sean, boy, I love you as a radio host. Too bad you're saddled with that sad sack Seth. And you're like, okay, well, how do I respond to that? You know, I can't even accept the compliment.
Yeah.
Because you're also without... arguing with you about how you feel about Seth, I'm assuming
no.
that you would argue.
I've had plenty of practice, so I've got the shtick down. No.
So just, you know, no, there's nothing right about what you said, Micah Parsons.
Nope.
You are 100% and completely and totally, you have succumbed to the disease that is Dallas, which is that you can't, no matter how much talent you have on that roster, Jerry Jones has created an environment where publicity and attention and clicks are paramount above all else.
Right.
And it doesn't actually winning football games.
Yeah.
The owner doesn't genuinely care as much as he claims that he does. He wants ticket sales and clicks and attention and all of that. And it makes it really, really hard to be a head football coach in an environment like that.
Let's hear from Micah. Micah kind of walked it back a little bit on his podcast as we pettycast the Micah Parsons situation with Mike McCarthy. Here was Micah on his pod blaming the media for this current dust-up.
We all have to see through the BS of what these TV analysts are trying to do and, you know, provide us and basically take words. I never once threw or even intended to throw Mike McCarthy under the bus. Like I said, he's one of the most winningest coach. He is a Super Bowl champ. I never once brung up his past. And the question that was asked was about here in the Dallas Cowboys, did I see Mike McCarthy in our future? And I said, that's above my pay grade. So never once did I ever intended or wanted to reflect on Mike McCarthy's career because I always knew it was a good one. I've always had a great relationship with Mike McCarthy, and I never even put that in question.
Okay.
This is what's fun. We're at a point right now when it comes to the media where, you know, Micah, it's very easy to just claim, you know, to blame the media and try to be sure you point them out as the villains. And that's what these people do. And they're taking my words. No, 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 man. None of it. Like he didn't even acknowledge or address the fact that he said that none of it. It's like everything you said, like that was the wrong thing to say, Micah. It was the wrong thing to say. But you got to remember, we're at a point now where podcasts are as influential in elections or otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
Like, podcasts are a big deal.
Yes.
Like, you are the media.
Yep.
You are, like, this is not, in some respects, like, Joe Rogan's podcast is way more influential than a lot of conventional media outlets these days. That, no, you don't get to just breeze by it and blame it on the ESPN talking heads. There are people in podcasts saying this exact same thing that Sean and I are saying
it's
right
happening.
Now.
It's happening.
Micah, it's a you thing. It's not a media
but
thing.
But here's a funny thing. Then there's this on the 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. There's a text taking up for Micah. Stop putting words in his mouth. It's more about the physical work. He didn't say anything about hours.
He said time.
Here's what he said.
Do great things with those type of legends who put in more time and work than Mike McCarthy ever did.
Okay, so you're the one putting words in his mouth.
Yeah, you're saying that he didn't say more
he
time.
He said time.
What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. All right, one more.
That's somebody who reads the first sentence of a tweet.
Yeah.
And then fires off a reply.
Yeah, doesn't
without
read
really,
the article.
Yeah, and that's what's killing humor.
Yes.
Because you can't even get past the setup of a joke. You get all triggered by the setup, and then you respond.
Got one more petty Micah Parsons cut. Here's one more from the podcast where he goes after Rex Ryan.
For a guy like Rex Ryan, I just know he wanted to coach the Cowboys. Like, I'm perfectly happy that we have Zimmerman, because if we have a guy that's willing to go on TV and provide this type of nonsense, imagine what he could do to a locker room.
Yeah.
Like, that's just honestly just outrageous to me at the end of the day.
His name's Zimmer, by the way, your defensive coordinator.
What did he call him?
Zimmerman.
Yeah. listen, anybody, if you're going to actually sit here and act like Micah Parsons doesn't say stupid things all the time,
yeah,
and you're going to blame it on Rex Ryan or something,
yeah,
I feel like I need to smoke more whatever you're smoking, because that's just, you're so far detached and you're so far gone that you refuse to recognize and realize reality. The fun of the offseason was CJ showing up every few weeks telling Micah Parsons what an idiot he is.
Yes.
And yeah, that's what he is. But he's got 3 sacks on the year. He's doing a hell of a job.
Oh yeah.
He's doing a hell of a job.
Oh yeah, when he's out there, for sure.
He's played 5 games.
Yeah. All right, let's continue to pettycast here. This was a Sunday morning. This is going to be me being petty right now. Okay? You've been warned. This is Sunday morning's game between the Panthers and the Giants in Munich, Germany. Sean Hockley, nepo baby of Ed Hockley, the referee for this game. There's a false start in the first quarter, and then...
Verstatt, Angriff.
Oh!
5 Yards Treffen. It's by the center. It's third down.
Oh, look at Sean Hockley.
He did the call in German. Oh, awesome. Rich Eisen freaking out about it. Like, the guy memorizes one line of German and be like, oh, this is great. And the crowd starts cheering. Sean Hockley, if there's any other referee, I'd be like, okay, that's pretty cool. But Ed Hockley's kid, you think Sean Hockley earned his way into this position here?
Sean Hockley, no, he's just he's done in the Texans with his overly aggressive. Talk about a guy that wants to live in Germany.
Yeah.
That dude loves law and order and rules and regs.
Both
and
of
everything
them
else like
Dad
that.
And the kid, yeah.
Yeah, they've gotten the Texans for the procedural penalties over. That crew right there has more of the illegal procedure calls than anybody else, and usually Hockley.
Do they really?
Yeah. So, no, I'm not buying it.
No.
Although, yeah, the Germans will go crazy for any attempt to speak German.
Oh, he's pandering.
Like, Ich bin Berliner was grammatically incorrect, but they were just so
close enough
that Kennedy was even trying to say it.
Yeah. Close enough. Hey, one more petty, Dallas.
You know what else? In the NFL, I'm going to get petty about this.
Okay.
I'm so tired of that promo they run for the European games where they get so excited about people in Germany singing Country Roads, Take Me Home.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, all right, great. Yeah, they're singing an American pop song in English. Yeah. Okay, it's not some testament to their love for America or anything.
No,
okay,
no, not at all. One more.
Plus, John Dever wasn't even from the country. He's a fraud.
Oh, he wasn't.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, that I kind of liked John Dever back
in
the day.
From like
Mountain Mama, Take Me Home. One more petty Dallas item. This is a tweet that I saw here from JTuck151. Chiefs trade for DeAndre Hopkins, that week he scores. Bills trade for Amari Cooper, that week he scores. Steelers trade for Mike Williams, that week he scores. Cowboys trade for Jonathan Mingo, that week he's inactive. So all these wide receiver trades going on for 4th and 5th round picks. Everybody else is getting touchdowns. Yeah. Cowboys are getting inactive Jonathan Mingo.
Cowboys were buyers at the trade deadline, extreme buyers, heavy buyers, and it turns out they probably shouldn't have been buyers, Sean, and certainly not at that place.
God, no. God, no.
It's like they went out and got a paycheck advance to buy a Louis Vuitton purse, you know? Yeah. It turns out it wasn't even a real Louis Vuitton purse.
No, it was one of those street ones in New York. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think, this is a text to the 5-Hour Energy fan line, you think Micah Parsons hurt his money with this incident? Isn't he a free agent? No, he didn't hurt his money. The Raiders still exist. He'll be fine.
He'll be fine, you know, and he's Parsons, again, going back to the podcast part of things, Parsons is one of those guys that I think in a previous era, he would have been kind of a goofy dude that every now and then would say something. But now that guys are available for comment 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it gets to be, because this isn't the first time either. Who was the run-in he had with a teammate last year? The teammate that criticized Micah Parsons' podcast.
I don't recall.
Yeah, his teammate had criticized Micah Parsons' podcasting, and then they had kind of had to have a discussion about it.
Do you think he takes it more personal when his podcast gets criticized or his play on the field? I mean, it's hard to criticize a lot of what he does on the field. When he's healthy, he's a great player.
Podcasting. Well, I know he got upset with the notion that he spends too much time or energy podcasting.
Podcasting, yeah.
And it isn't, the time and energy is really a nothing. I've never watched his podcast. I think he does it. I don't think he's got like somebody there as his co-host that kind of directs the show.
I don't know. Just, I've never watched.
I think it's just Micah and from the clips I've seen. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's the ramifications of everything you say when you're speaking freely and loosely. Yep. I think CJ will probably dial back his podcast appearance schedule this next offseason. It's extra flack out there, and it's extra potential drama that you don't need.
I got one more pettycast, and this is just a factual pettiness here for someone whose audio we play quite a bit on the show. This was Colin Cowherd yesterday on the show previewing the Dolphins versus Rams game last night.
Mm-hmm.
Here you go.
Well, the Rams are still not healthy on the interior of their O-line. They're playing a rookie center. They don't want to. They're playing a pretty marginal left guard. So it's still not a great O-line. Is Christian Wilkins playing the D-tackle for the Dolphins?
They're not going to do inactives until a little later today.
So, though. I mean, I think the Rams could have a little problem running the ball tonight through their interior. But
okay, there's one problem with asking, is Christian Wilkins playing tonight? A, he's on injured reserve.
Yeah.
B, he plays for the Las Vegas Raiders.
Right, which was one of the more heralded signings in the offseason. Somebody a lot of people were hoping to get Christian Wilkins or what have you. My thought immediately, Sean, was I've experimented with using ChatGPT for show prep.
Yeah.
And I have largely not really found a strategy where I think it's adequate. Mostly because ChatGPT will spit out information like that. It has a really hard time sometimes getting the timelines right and stats right in sports. And I could totally see if I had said, hey, give me a preview of this game and tell me concerns. ChatGPT might have spit something out about Christian Wilkins being injured.
Seth.
Yeah.
Pettycast.
Yeah, no. This is what I'm saying. I'm being petty.
Okay.
I think that Colin Cowherd is trying to use ChatGPT for show prep.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying...
Can you have an attention span of more than 20 seconds, Sean?
No.
I'll get petty towards your ass.
No, I thought you were sticking up for Colin Cowherd.
No, I'm saying I think he might be phoning it in with ChatGPT.
Oh, I got you. I got you. That would be bad if he used ChatGPT. That would be bad. Isn't AI supposed to be an efficiency tool for some of us in the
It should be if you use it properly.
Right.
If you try to have it, you know, perform your heart surgery right this moment, probably not a good idea. Sometime off in the future, sure. But like with any new technology, you got to figure out when and where to use it.
Okay, we have breaking news in the NFL, and I am very
petty about it.
And I am very curious what Texan fan reaction is going to be to what one other NFL team is doing. And this NFL team has a bright young quarterback just like the Texans. We'll share this with you coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll do the power ranking of the power rankings at the top of the hour. I'm very curious how the experts are viewing the Texans. Do they view the Sunday night game as a missed opportunity and a choke job, or do they view it as the Texans stood in against the Lions, you know, maybe the best team in football?
Right.
And it came down to a field goal at the end. I'm very curious.
I'm slowly coming around to is that, okay, if I look at it objectively, they did – They did that without Nico Collins and without Will Anderson, which is, it sounds overly simplistic, and yet sometimes things are simple because they're true. Yeah, not having your two best football players on the team right now is going to matter, and it's going to make a difference. It's just that you also look at, okay, but they've also lost three of the last four games. If they hadn't lost to the freaking Jets, who then went out and got destroyed the next week, that part of it makes it really, really hard to just excuse it all away. But yeah, they'll be a better team if and when they get their two best players back.
Yeah, well, and just the last thing I would add, just to the downside, the complete ineptitude on offense in the second half of these football games is just, that's an extreme thing. And somebody asked on the 5-Hour Energy fan line, hey, Sean, how many games have they not scored a single touchdown in the second half of a football game this year? The answer is 6 out of the 10. They've gone 0 touchdowns. They've got 6 total touchdowns in the second half of football games this year. 6 of the games this year, they've been completely shut out. The news.
Well, and that young up-and-coming, I don't know if you've heard of this J.J. Watt fella.
He's a broadcaster,
The one that
the McAfee show.
The one that frames it better, I think, in terms of how it feels, was he pointed out, because we've been saying, hey, they haven't scored a touchdown in the second half in the last 4 games. Not scoring a touchdown in the second half in 5 of the last 6 games that's a 6-game stretch where you've struggled to do anything in the second half. Yeah, that's tough.
Well, and the only second half you scored touchdowns in was against the New England Patriots when they were at rock bottom and they were turning the ball over like crazy in the second half of that game. They were giving you short fields in that game. If you know, that's probably way too much detail, but it's emblazoned into my brain now because they've been so bad. The breaking news that we teased coming into this segment is that the Bears have fired offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. So now Caleb Williams, number one overall pick, savior of the Bears franchise, a quarterback that Bears fans were celebrating as their greatest quarterback in the history of the team before he even took a snap, and who at times has looked good this year, but for most of the time, and especially recently, he's been running for his life and he's not looked good. All the things that were on the scouting report to the negative for Caleb Williams, Seth, coming in, even though he's called a generational prospect, there were some negatives on there. They've been coming back to roost quite a bit over these last few weeks. Waldron is the one that is, I say, taking the fall. It's not like Waldron's been doing a great job or anything like that, but they are firing. So 10 games into his NFL career, 9 games, whatever it is, Caleb Williams is on his second offensive coordinator.
and Shane Waldron, there's some similarities there in that the questions in the offseason were, okay, is Bobby Slowick going to be able to engineer or be the architect of an actual, a credible rushing attack? And so far, Joe Mixon has looked good, and yet the rushing attack is certainly not one to be feared. They don't consistently run the ball when they need to run the ball well. Shane Waldron's a guy who was hired, and I feel like there was a whole lot of him. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, he was the passing game coordinator for the Rams, which we all know, just like Bobby Slowick was the passing game coordinator for the 49ers.
Yep.
All right. It's a glorified name for you're the assistant to the actual guy who's coordinating the passing game.
Yeah.
Whether it's McVay or Kyle Shanahan. The run game, where Waldron, when he was with the Seahawks in 3 seasons, was always in the bottom half of the league in the run game. And hasn't shown any signs that he can actually do it with the Bears either, especially with a young quarterback where he'd love to have that run, a running element to it. It feels like there's some Bobby Slowick elements to this.
There's a lot of similarities here. I mean, you outlined a few of them right there. I mean, this was a team that went and got weapons for its young quarterback in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Like the Texans and the Bears probably, they're very kind of mirror images of each other from the standpoint of they went and got like sort of a big three. You know, when it comes, you know, the Bears, they got DJ Moore in the trade for Bryce Young. He was already there when Caleb got there. They went and traded a 4th-round pick for Keenan Allen. They used the 9th overall pick on Roma Dunze. So they went and got 3 big wide receivers, and everybody thought that, and they signed DeAndre Swift. It's going to be a big fireworks show. Similarly, the Texans already had Nico Collins and Tank Dell in the fold. They go and they get Stephon Diggs. They trade for Joe Mixon. So I think similarly with both teams, the offensive lines have really, really struggled. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of question marks about the composition of the offensive line and maybe the evaluation of the offensive line in both places. So This is a really interesting story from a Texans perspective. Now, to be clear, I don't think Bobby Slowik's getting fired. I know there's a lot of people. You look at the text page today, the 5-Hour Energy fan line. We were talking about Slowik at some point during the show, Seth, and I don't know what triggered it, what you or I said, but there were six straight texts from different people of fire Bobby Slowik. So I don't know what it was we said at that point, but there is that sentiment out there. I don't think that's happening with the Houston Texans. I don't think D'Amico Ryans is firing Bobby Slowik.
I don't. Yeah, it doesn't feel like something that's going to happen in season.
Yeah, that's what I mean. By the
time you get Nico Collins back, it's going to just be. I would say it's too late to make that change. The Bills made it relatively late last year. They made their coordinator change about 2/3 of the way through the season. Yeah. I'll be surprised if they fire him in season. If Nico Collins comes back and they still struggle with a lot of things they were struggling with offensively when Nico Collins was healthy still, Nico Collins was producing. The offense was not. You know, we got to remember that. So if Nico Collins comes back and he keeps producing, but the offense is still a mediocre offense, yeah, you gotta make a decision in the offseason, and you got to have answers. It's going to be an ugly offseason for D'Amico if the offense doesn't improve on what they did back when Nico Collins was healthy the first time. It's going to feel a lot like the Texans in 2010.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, what are we doing here with the defense? Yeah, like, do something about the defense. Oh, you're just going to roll with these guys again, huh? All right, Gary Kubiak.
Yeah.
And then finally in 2011, they went out and got Wade Phillips.
Yeah, well, and that was – and Bob McNair had to kind of step in on that. Yeah. You know, like, that was – that was how that went down. So, yeah, that's right. They brought back Frank Bush in 2010, and it got worse. So, yeah, there's too much talent. And look, man, the fact of the matter is you're burning daylight on a really valuable piece of your a really valuable time of your franchise here with C.J. Stroud still so cheap on the books, you know, and you can't be doing that by underperforming. Does this save Matt? Does this mean Matt Eberflus is still back for the Bears, do you think? Or does he? Is my value pick of him being 25-1 to be the next head coach? I feel like my ticket took a hit today, Seth, that instead of firing Eberflus and cashing my 25-1 ticket on Eberflus as the next head coach fired, that Shane Waldron will be the sacrifice bunt here in the whole thing.
I think that given just NFL owners in general and how they operate, they're going to just try to go for the absolute opposite of Matt Eberflus. They're going to say, yep, we messed up. We should have hired an offensive-minded head coach with a young quarterback, all of that, which sometimes it's the right strategy, sometimes it isn't. But the Shane Waldron, he's not Mike Tomlin. He's not Bill Belichick. He's not a defensive-minded – excuse me, not Matt Eberflus.
Matt Eberflus
is not those head coaches that can get the most out of multiple different offensive coordinators unless they show some kind of real signs of juice or life here.
Yep. Let's see here. Text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. The last straw for Waldron was the clip of Caleb Williams – shaking his head and rolling his eyes at him on Sunday. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Kind of like the last straw for Robert Saleh was Aaron Rodgers shoving him away when Saleh was going in for the hug.
And I think that CJ, to his credit, he's been vocally supportive of Bobby Slowik these last few weeks. He's been the one up saying that guys got to really buy in and Bobby's making the right calls, but guys aren't executing. And I do agree with that. I mean, CJ himself would tell you he was one of those guys who wasn't executing when they'd schemed a wide open Tank Dell in the second half. There was a touchdown there for the taking in the third quarter, and CJ just threw a bad ball. So it's not 100% on Bobby Slowik. Guys have to execute, but it does. Guys executing, that's on the offensive coordinator. Some coordinators just get do a better job of getting their guys to execute. So it's not you make a mistake if you boil it down to simply play calling with the offensive coordinator. It's the guys executing, that falls on the offensive coordinator as well.
Yeah, there was I lost the text here, but there was someone here blaming Bobby Slowik for playing too conservative, playing not to lose. Do you think the conservative approach, does that come from higher up than Bobby Slowik? Do you think D'Amico says, here's the approach we want to take? you know, we want to grind clock. We want to run the ball, and then Bobby has to pick the best running play, that kind of thing.
No, I think that in his mind's eye, you want to run this offense where the run game and the pass game complement each other, and where you're running the ball and it looks the same as your pass plays. So you set up the, frankly, everything that the Lions do really well.
Yeah,
I mean, Jared Goff probably doesn't get enough credit for how good he is at the deception side of things. I remember a couple weeks ago he got sacked when he wasn't even holding the ball because he's so good with the fakes and everything else. And I'm watching the Lions, and man, some of the misdirection and some of the deception, it's next level. They do a really good job with it, and Jared Goff is a big part of that. So, yeah, they want to be able to run the ball, make that look exactly like the pass, and then run play action off of that. The problem is the Texans' offensive line, it's not just that they can't run the ball when they need to run the ball. And it's not just that they suck on first down or what have you. It's that there's nothing about that way the offensive line operates that puts linebackers and safeties in a bind in terms of reading pass or run.
Mm-hmm.
It's very obvious what play they're running. Za'Darius Smith after the game last week said, somewhere in point in the game, he said, "Hey guys, just listen to the O-line calls for the pass protection." And this is something where sometimes offensive coordinators or offensive line coaches think defensive linemen are dumber than we actually are, even though we're not the brightest bunch, but
bright enough.
When you're hearing guys give a rip call, which means a slide to the right or Liz or what have you, it's pretty easy to know what pass protection's coming on, and if they're not sprinkling in dummy calls along the way.
Yeah.
And that's when teams can really start feasting. And it sounds like, when you've got a young center who's playing the position this year for the first time, probably not a whole lot of dummy calls or anything else like that, because these guys can't operate on that level. Mm. Yeah, basically the Lions were in the playbook for the Texans.
Yeah, they had the answers to the test. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Positives from the Lions game on Sunday as we continue. We're still digging into it a little bit here because it was Sunday night game. The PFF scores, the Pro Football Focus, do the PFF scores for the five best Texans match what the eye test told us? We have that. We'll do the power ranking of the power rankings coming up at the top of the hour. Stay there.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so we'll do the power ranking of the power rankings at the top of the hour. I have not looked at them yet to see what the experts think of the Texans. Again, I think the big question is, was the loss to the Lions viewed as a overall positive that they played on the scoreboard, at least toe-to-toe with the best team in football, or was it a negative because they couldn't score in the second half, and a lot of the same things reared its ugly head? And they were missing their two best players, too, and I think that was kind of lost in the wash after the game, just in the frustration of the complete ineptitude of the offense in the second half is, right, no Nico Collins and no Will Anderson in that game. And I do wonder for this weekend, Seth, too, like how cautious they're going to be, particularly with both of those guys. Like, we've got no real news on Will and how he's doing with the ankle.
Right. And that was how it was during training camp, too. You just assumed, okay, maybe they're just being extra careful with him and his ankle is just fine. The other day I said that, boy, Steph Curry had chronic ankle issues early in his career, and he ended up being just fine afterwards. And somebody said, well, I don't know if I'd call it chronic yet. And I think that was fair. I think that's fair that you can't call it chronic, but it has been three notable ankle injuries in less than two seasons.
Yeah.
And he is a guy who doesn't have great natural ankle flexion, and he's not wired that way as an athlete like Danielle Hunter is. And you wonder, moving forward, okay, they got to figure out a way, hopefully, to keep him from having his. And I know on that play, yes, his ankle got rolled up. It wasn't so extreme that I felt like, anybody would have sprained their ankle there and anybody would be out. It's somebody that, if you've got a history of ankle issues there, you're going to sprain your ankle on that.
Yeah, part. Yeah. And it's it happened again, So as far as positives go from the Lions game on Sunday night, so Pro Football Focus put out their scores after the game on, each player gets a score for how well they performed overall. And tell me, Seth, if these, I have the five best scores for the Texans from the game on Sunday night. You tell me if this matches the eye test for you.
Okay.
The best score was Derek, as a tie, actually. Derek Stingley. I'll start with one of them. Derek Stingley Jr. got an 86. And the reason why I feel like Derek Stingley Jr. had a great game is because you hardly saw him at all.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's turning into that kind of cornerback where, for the most part, he's not going to get a boatload of interceptions. Most good cornerbacks have a bunch of interceptions in their first couple years, and then it dies down because teams just stop testing them. And I think that Stingley is at that point now. I think with Stingley, it just becomes more a matter of, all right, why do we not have him shadowing the best receiver every single week? And I think the answer to that sometimes is, well, if a team has multiple good receivers, you'll lose some of that benefit. It's probably better just to have him playing in his most comfortable position because he's going to end up on one of the better of two receivers. And we've seen that in the last few weeks when they've gone up against teams that have really genuinely good wide receiving cores, like the Jets. So they're not doing anything with them, but they got good receivers there. It's hard to just pick the guy to shadow. So there's going to be opportunities for other guys elsewhere.
Almost had a pick in the game early on. Damn, everybody had a pick eventually in that game. Stingley, ironically, was not one of the guys who got an interception. The other player, this is an interesting one. The other player tied for first with the scores on PFF for the Texans, Dalton Schultz, an 86. Mm-hmm. He tied with Stingley. What did you think? Schultz was a little more involved in the passing game this time.
Involved in the passing game. Like I've said about the tight ends, they're willing blockers. They're just not always that great at it. And, you know, Schultz will sacrifice his body to try to complete a block. He's just not that physically good at it. I guess. All right, there you go. I don't feel like he had like a... he's making the Pro Bowl performance.
And it's better that you don't agree with all of these. So that one was a little surprising to me. Number three on the list, Kalen Bullock, an 81.6. So the rookie safety gets in the mix here.
He had an interception. Yeah, and the way the grades go with PFF, that's why people get down on the grades sometimes. I think sometimes they weight the things a little differently. I do think that Kalen Bullock was probably his best usage by the Texans, in that he was used 40 snaps in the game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where previously with Jimmy Ward out, he was out there 100% of the time or close to it. I think with Jimmy Ward back, they can use Kalen Bullock in measured doses and take advantage of his playmaking ability. And I think that's right where he needs to be right now. I think Jimmy Ward's experience helps a lot, especially on limiting some of the deeper shots, anticipating what plays are coming, all of that. But Kalen Bullock just provides a playmaking ability that other safeties athletically don't have. Yep. So as long as all three of those guys are healthy, then yeah. This was his best PFF grade of the season, Kalen Bullock.
Okay.
And I think it kind of coincides with his worst grade of the season was a couple weeks ago against Indianapolis. That's when he's the full-time guy out there. In a measured dose, yeah, I think they used him appropriately.
Yeah. I love when a ball gets thrown out. Like, that deep ball, especially from where we sit up in the press box, and it's sailing up there, and it's thrown in Kalen Bullock's direction. And it's like, okay, he's in position to make a play on this ball. I feel like he's coming down with it.
He's going to make a play on the ball.
He's going to make a play on the ball. Fourth for the Texans. So Stingley and Schultz had the best scores. Bullock third. John Mechie fourth with an 81. That matches the eye test to me.
And I think with John Mechie, too, some of it is a trust factor and a trust level. And it's not like, well, CJ trusts this guy as a person and he doesn't trust that guy as a person. It's just a matter of just time actually out there getting reps with the starting quarterback. It feels like CJ's starting to look at and go to John Mechie more so than he did back, you know, that final completion to Tank Dell against Green Bay. Really, probably because CJ had time, he should have come across the formation and thrown it to John Mechie, who would have been open in the end zone for a touchdown. I think now, if in that same situation, CJ might be more comfortable making that read.
That would be something, man. If they get Nico back and all of a sudden Mechie starts realizing some of his potential. I mean, it's a second-round pick. He came into the league. It's a second-round pick with an ACL injury coming into the league, you know. That would be something. Last one in the top five here. Danielle Hunter had an 80.9 score. What did you think of Danielle Hunter's game? No sacks in that game for the
Texans. Right. But he had a couple of key pressures.
Yeah.
And I think in the absence of Will Anderson especially, he was making his presence known. But then by the same token, you talk about offensive play callers and kind of just feeling the flow of the game. Dan Skipper was the backup left guard or left tackle. And there were, the play before their huge screen play there in the fourth quarter, Dan Skipper got destroyed by Danielle Hunter. And yeah. Ben Johnson told Dan Skipper, do the exact same thing on the next, this next play. And that's when they sucked everybody. Every defensive lineman got duped on that.
Yep.
They threw that screen off to the left,
yeah.
And then there you go. That one, that was really good play calling by Ben Johnson.
Yeah, that was nice.
Instructed his left tackle to get destroyed on the next play, which is the perfect time to prime it. When a defense has felt a little bit of success, and then you just they see the same look, and
use
you're a little bit
them.
Less likely to feel like, oh, wait a second, I won too easy.
Right.
There were two defensive linemen on that play. It's a defensive tackle especially. You always have to question yourself a little bit when you win really, really fast.
Yeah.
If you're not Warren Sapp. Like, you got to be like, wait a second. How did I win that fast? And the Texans all succumbed to it on that play. They all had sack fever where, dude, no, you did not beat that guard in 0.2 seconds on your own. You got duped, man.
No,
they
know.
They all got sucked up field on
as
that.
As someone,
one.
Just a fan watching, I know the exact plays you're talking about because you're like, yeah, oh, wait.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
you're jubilant for like 4/10 of a second because you're like, oh my God, we're going to murder
you thought
this
Jared Goff was like 3 minutes away from being in an ambulance
yes.
on his way over to the medical center.
And next thing you know, Jahmyr Gibbs is off to the races. All right, let's do the power ranking of the power rankings. I am very anxious to see what the experts think of the Houston Texans after that Lions game on Sunday night. So we will rank what they think of the Houston Texans, and we will do that coming up next.